Now, those who have made this matter a subject of deep observation in the spirit world, not here on earth, inform us that beyond what is termed by you the Arctic and Antarctic regions, there are almost unlimited stretches of land and water, varying in climate according to the conditions by which they are surrounded, according to the planetary influences that act upon them. This world, they tell us, this floating sphere, is by no means so small as you suppose it to be. It is small when compared with the vast universe outside of itself, but it is not so small as scientists of Earth have determined. They tell us that, as mind changes its space of operations, so the Earth changes correspondingly, or as the Earth changes, so mind changes, and there will come a time when the scientists of Earth shall be able to investigate still further, still more deeply, still more perfectly than at present, and it will be because of the change of climatic influences. That portion of the Earth that is now so cold and rarefied that you cannot approach it, you cannot go beyond a certain climate and boundary line, will be changed to meet the needs of growing intelligence. Everything, we find, is finally subservient to the human will, and that all-powerful probe, human intelligence, that is never satisfied with the present. It is impossible to give the exact latitude and longitude of those localities. The time will come, but not in your day, when that which is now but a spiritual theory will be a fixed and demonstrated fact, just as much so as the fact that the world moves, or that it is nearly spherical in shape. Question. Do heat and cold affect spirits in the spirit world? Answer. Only when they enter Earth's atmosphere. That is to say, that heat and cold which belong especially to the Earth's atmosphere, that affects them when they return here, because they then come under the laws that belong to the Earth, by which the Earth is governed. For instance, if I am in this room, as a disembodied intelligence even, I feel the peculiar quality of the atmosphere. I am affected by the heat and the cold. By William E. Channing, April 13, 1868. Question. Do all grades of animal spirits exist visibly in the spirit land? Answer. Yes, but that spirit land is right here on the Earth, and those animal spirits are inhabiting animal bodies here on the Earth. It is the tendency of matter to unfold, to perfect itself, to grow into higher and more perfect forms, and therefore the animal forms that have an existence on the Earth today will by and by become extinct, to give room to higher forms. Life expresses itself always through form, and the form depends upon the condition of the life for its expression. For instance, all the lower orders of animal life reveal to us a certain amount of animal life, and nothing beyond it. There is no reason, no higher grade of intelligence manifested anywhere except through humanity, and by even these human forms will give place to others more perfect, better adapted to the life that is to come. They serve well the life that is, but they will not answer the purpose of that which is to be. So do not expect that throughout all the future you will retain the semblance of these forms, for you certainly will not. Question. Perhaps I shall be no better understood, if I put the question in this form. Take the case of a horse. It dies. Does that spirit appear in animal form in the future state, or does it vanish? This was at page 172. Answer. No. I believe that the spirit of animal life belongs, so far as its outward expression is concerned, to the Earth and all other planets that have given birth to animal life. They have a spirit, to be sure, but that spirit, so far as animal expression is concerned, is non-immortal. You may rest assured of that. By William E. Channing, April 14, 1868. Question. Do spirits use vocal language in the spirit world, as they did on Earth? If not, by what means do they converse with each other? Answer. Yes, they do use vocal language, but it would not be vocal to human senses, to those senses that belong to the physical body. It is only vocal to the senses that belong to the spirit body. There is sound, all the different varieties of sound, in the spirit world proper, as here. Question. In what does God exist? Answer. In everything. Tell us in what he does not exist. Question. In all form? Answer. In all forms. He exists in you, in me, in all these different forms, in everything. Question. Is he, then, a personal being? Answer. Yes, so far as form is concerned. He is personified in all forms, having no special form, but taking all. That is my belief. Question. Do you recognize him as distinct and separate from human beings? Answer. No, certainly not. I recognize him as one with them. Question. As we become more spiritual, are not our perceptions more clear in relation to him? Answer. Certainly. This was at page 173. By Father Henry Fitz-James, April 16, 1868. Question. Is it not probable that before many years electricity will be the motor of machinery, instead of steam? Answer. It is, so scientific minds inform us, very probable. Franklin is largely engaged in impressing, or seeking to impress, the knowledge that he has gained during his residence in the spirit world upon those minds that are able to receive it. He makes advance as mind advances on the earth. No faster. Question. A scientific explanation of idiocy is requested. Answer. There are various theories concerning idiocy. A certain class of scientific minds, with us, have recently determined that the cause of it may generally be found in the imponderables of the physical form, an unequal distribution of the electric and magnetic forces. In consequence of this unequal distribution, the spirit is unable to manifest itself. They determined that the spirit, the essential life, the intelligent part, is, of itself, perfect, and in many instances the external physical is, of itself, a perfect machine, but the cause lies between the two, as I before said, in the imponderables, those gases that keep the machine in motion, that power by which the spirit manifests through the physical body. Question. Do not the signs of the times indicate that ere long great and revolutionary changes may be expected, both in material existence, and, more particularly, in human and political life? Answer. Yes, and more than this, the signs of the times not only indicate such an experience, but it is already with you. The revolution in mind has already commenced all through the world, and modern spiritualism is the great lever that is producing it. By William E. Channing, April 20, 1868. Question. Please explain the law that produces physical manifestations, and why they are more frequent than in former times. Answer. It would be absolutely impossible to give a full, clear explanation of the law by which these manifestations are performed, without demonstration, and as the conditions are wanting here by which we can demonstrate the law, we, of course, must fail in the answer. They are of more frequent occurrence in these days, perhaps, than in past time, because man is more unfolded, and the earth is also in a state more fitted to receive such so-called occult manifestations. The earth is ready for such, mind is ready for such. A few years in the past, a few when compared with eternity, certainly. A certain band of disembodied spirits returned to earth for the purpose of demonstrating the reality of life after death to those who remained on the earth. They came, a certain portion of them, very near this locality, and what was the result? Why, the darkness swallowed up the light, absolutely crucified it, and therefore, as a matter of justice to the instruments through which the light was to shine, it retired to wait till the darkness should by a natural process be dispelled. The same light has come again, the same class of manifestations that were given then are given today, but under different circumstances. The darkness of night has passed away, therefore the instruments through which these manifestations were made are no longer crucified, as they were in those days, but the time is coming when the light will shine still brighter, when these manifestations, both physical and mental, will have reached an altitude far beyond the present, and you will look back upon the present, doubtless considering it as the infancy of spirit manifestations. Question. In case of destroyed manuscripts or of typed works of literature, or of records important to us here on Earth, have you, in the spirit world, those ideas in record unobliterated? If so, are they where you can consult them, and impart their purport to us, when of importance to the development of science? Answer. An accurate record of all written or unwritten thoughts that have found expression upon this planet is kept in the spirit world proper, that belongs to this planet. Not a single thought is lost. All the old ideas are carefully kept in the spirit world. Nothing is lost, because everything has an internal or immortal life. All those valuable records that the past had, but the present has not, so far as human life is concerned, are all kept in the spirit world, and every soul that desires to inform itself concerning those records is at liberty so to do. They are free to all. The spirit world is one vast public library. By Joseph Löwenthal, April 23, 1868. Question. God sent his only begotten Son into the world that whosoever believeth in him shall have eternal life. My mind dwells on the only begotten as the point at issue with the belief of spiritualists. Answer. Your speaker has no belief in an only begotten Son of Jehovah. He never did have any, therefore in all probability will fail to do justice to the subject according to the comprehension of the Christian world. Your speaker believes that every son and daughter of humanity, whether they had an existence in the past, or existing in the present, are the begotten sons and daughters of Jehovah, every one of them, not one any more than another. The breath of the infinite is with all, and all are created in the image of God, which meaneth in the image of all things that have been, of all that are, and all that can be. This only begotten Son of God, whom the Christian Church reverences so much, was doubtless a most excellent specimen of humanity, but nothing more. It may be determined that your speaker still lingers amid the shadows of the Jewish Church. It is not so. No shadow of any church, Jew or Gentile, lingers around the opinion of your speaker. I believe in the greatness, in the omnipotence of God. But I do not believe that one child is more specially blessed by him than all others. I have more faith in his justice than to believe him to be a partial God. I believe him to be the great spirit pervading mind and matter, acting through all things, at all times, in all places, and I believe he finds expression more perfectly through human senses than anywhere else, but no more perfectly through a Jesus of Nazareth than through any other good man or woman. Question. Is it not necessary for a person to become weak in the physical being, in order to be in the proper condition for spirits to manifest through? And is not the medium generally very weak and susceptible to all influences, good or bad? Answer. Weakness is sometimes a necessity of these manifestations, but not always. It is not a general rule. It is an exceptional one. There are some mediums whose bodily health is very excellent, while there are others who seemingly flutter between the two worlds. Sometimes the weakness of the body can be made use of by a foreign spirit in giving these manifestations. Sometimes sound health will answer their purpose much better. Question. I would like to ask, if it would not be better to resist spirit influences, to keep away from them, and not allow one's self to become a medium. I am somewhat under the influence myself, and have been reduced from a strong and healthy to a very weak condition. Would it not be better for me and many others to keep away from circles where we are subject to those influences? Answer. Your Bible teaches that you should not resist the Spirit. It is oftentimes this very resistance that produces this inharmony between the indwelling spirit and the physical body, therefore inducing disease. There are times, no doubt, when it would be well to keep away from these promiscuous gatherings, those gatherings where any and every spirit is licensed towards any and every individual. There are some physical organizations so susceptible to spirit influence that under certain conditions they will be controlled, whether it is their purpose to be, or the contrary. It should be remembered that the spirit world proper is the more positive world, that the spirit out of the body is more positive than the spirit in the body, and therefore has the advantage over the spirit in the body. All those subtle wires of electric and magnetic life that pass from your physical bodies out into the atmosphere, are all agents in the hands of unseen intelligences, every one of them. They can be used to your detriment, or the contrary. If you desire to retain your health, and at the same time give yourself to the use of foreign intelligences, it is your duty to make yourself as harmonious as possible, to study the laws of life and harmony, those laws which pertain to you as an individual, not those which pertain to anyone else. This was at page 178. Learn what is best for you. No general rule can be applied to all. There is a law of life for each individual. For instance, one person is obliged to appropriate to the physical a certain amount of animal food each day, in order to keep the machine in good trim, while another finds that animal food is not adapted to him. Vegetable answers his purpose much better. You should study what is best for you. If a certain class of spirits come to influence you, to the taking away of your health, and substituting weakness and disease, you should learn what the characteristics of those spirits are, and how and why they injure you, and then seek to educate them as well as yourself. When they are satisfied that they are unjust to you, believe us, they will be unjust no longer. I have that amount of faith in humanity, either as it is immortal or beyond mortality, that makes me feel that no soul will ever practice injustice when it is once satisfied that a thing is unjust, absolutely. By Reverend John Murray, April 27, 1868. Question. Will the controlling spirit give a full and complete definition of A. mesmeric aura, in order that the unlearned reader may understand the intimate relation such an agent bears to spiritualism? Give us a scientific analysis of the whole idea, if you please. Answer. That would take a very long time to accomplish, for it is of itself very great. The science of mesmerism is embraced in the science of life, life here and life hereafter. All the emanations of these animal bodies may be called animal magnetism, or the animal or material sphere in which you, as beings of this world, live, move, and have your being. You are constantly taking on magnetic influences from everything that you come in contact with, and you are as perpetually shedding that magnetic life upon all things that you come in contact with. When disembodied spirits desire to communicate through organic life to organic life, they of necessity come into communication or rapport with the magnetic life of the spirit. Sometimes it is exceedingly antagonistic, then there can be no perfect communion. At other times it is all that could be desired. This magnetic aura is simply thought impalpable, yet all-potent, that is exercised by the mind and projected through the animal life. You cannot see it, you cannot feel it, except with the perceptions of the spirit, you cannot handle it, you cannot analyze it, and yet it is all-potent to the spirit. So far as the spirit is concerned it is all-powerful, it sometimes prevents you from uttering a single word, or giving birth to a single thought. It is the grand agent that acts between mind and matter. It is the power that holds worlds in their places, and holds thoughts in their places. It is the power that forms thought, and it is the power by which thought is expressed. It is infinite in itself, and it would be absolutely impossible to analyze it, because of its infinitude. Question. Do departed spirits have any agency in mesmerism, or is it simply the action of mind upon mind in the flesh? Answer. A departed spirit may mesmerize a subject, or the spirit that still retains its hold upon this organic life may mesmerize a subject. Each can do it. A disembodied spirit has a certain degree of advantage over the embodied spirit, but both are able to perform the same thing. It is something that both the embodied and the disembodied can deal with. Question. What is the advantage of disembodied spirits praying, through a human organism? Answer. The same advantage is derived by the disembodied spirit that is derived by the spirit that is embodied. Prayer always elevates the spirit, whether it is here in the flesh or passed beyond the flesh. It always lifts the spirit beyond or outside of its present cares and perplexities. It sheds a newer and diviner atmosphere around it, and attracts to itself higher and more powerful, more holy, more perfect intelligences, and by the presence of those intelligences the praying spirit receives benefit. You cannot remain in the presence of one that is holy, good, and true, without receiving benefit, for the good always shed a holy influence which every soul that is in rapport with it must feel. Prayer is of use always, and all souls are constantly at prayer. Now, this may seem to be a very wild, erratic statement, but it is nevertheless true. All souls are constantly at prayer, because all are constantly aspiring towards a better state. This is prayer. One kind of prayer is embodied in words, another kind in deeds. There are many kinds of prayer, aside from those that are clothed in words. By Theodore Parker, April 28, 1868. Question. Is there not a transitional condition of the atmosphere, during the months of March and April, which is more unfavorable to health than at other seasons? And how can we avoid or repel such influence when exposed to it? Answer. I am not sure that this transition state of the seasons is absolutely inimical to life. Experience and observation have taught us that during these months certain planets seem to have, and do have, a direct influence upon the Earth, an influence to call out from her center what the surface has need of, consequently the elements, magnetic and electric, all the atmospheric elements will be in a state of unrest, in a state of labor, to bring forth renewed life. And as man is but an animal upon the surface of the earth, and an animal made up of mineral and vegetable, as well as animal and spiritual substances, of necessity he must feel these changes. But it would be unwise to determine that they are absolutely unfavorable to him. On the contrary, I think that were we to dispense with those conditions which these months bring upon us, we should find ourselves very much worse off than at present. These bodies that are upon the earth today are peculiarly adapted to the atmospheric conditions by which they are surrounded, and should you, if you could, bring about the change which many desire in these atmospheric surroundings, the result would be, I think, in very many instances, fatal to human life. You have absolute need, as the earth has need, of your March winds, of your April showers, and of all the quick and successive changes that these months bring. You could not well spare them, and though they are, in one sense, the shadows of earth life, yet in another sense they are the sunbeams, and we would advise you to take no course whatever to prevent their legitimate action upon you, for if you should do so, under existing circumstances, I cannot see that it will be as well for you. Question. Is it ever right to exercise revenge? Answer. Yes, it is right to those who exercise it, but to those who see the dark, deformed side of revenge, it is not right. It surely is not the better way. The soul that exercises revenue does so because it is ignorant of the better way, always. I never knew an individual to exercise, or seek to exercise, revenge upon any of his fellows, when that individual was attended with wisdom upon the subject. The desire to be revenged is born of ignorance. When ignorance ceases to give birth to such monstrosities, then they will be no more. By Abdul Hader, April 30, 1868. Question. Is it true that both mental and physical sufferings are eventually beneficial to the development of the spirit? Answer. The philosophy of mind reveals to us this fact, that intelligence can only become perfect through suffering, both mental and physical, as the earth can only reach a perfect state, or can only grow, through storms as well as sunshine, so the soul, or mentality of man or woman, can only reach a perfect state through the storms of sorrow and human despair. Question. Have the inhabitants of the older planets, that were formed before our Earth, arrived at such a degree of intelligence as to know how to keep in perfect health? And do they live in love and harmony? Answer. Many of them do, particularly the inhabitants of Uranus and Jupiter. It is the destiny of the inhabitants of all planets to outlive these inharmonious conditions, which are a necessity of the Earth's growth. The inhabitants of a planet grow as the planet grows. When there are no more poisonous reptiles, plants, or poisonous substances on the Earth, no more tornadoes, when all these outward signs of violence, material, earthly signs of violence, have passed away, then the signs of violence that pertain more particularly to your human, physical life will also have passed away. This is the destiny, I believe, of human life. This was at page 183. Question. Have any of the inhabitants of any other planet ever visited this Earth and made themselves known? Answer. I think, if such a thing ever occurred, it certainly is something very rare. The inhabitants belonging to each separate planet, those who have passed beyond the material into the spiritual life, are, of necessity, more powerfully attracted to the planet of which they have been born than to any other. Indeed, it is almost impossible for the inhabitant of any other planet to visit the Earth in propria persona, or vice versa. Answer. Everything is conducted in accordance with law and order throughout the universe, and no absolute law is ever violated by the spirit. By Theodore Parker, May 5, 1868. Question. If a person act as he is impressed, will he always do right? Answer. There are an infinite number of degrees of right, each one being a discrete degree. There are also an infinite number of sources from which an individual soul can gain impressions, and the soul is quite as liable to receive impressions from the lower as from the higher, therefore it is not always the highest wisdom to follow our impressions. I know it is so determined by very many souls, but I cannot so understand it. If we are sure that we are harmonious at the time with the highest good of which we can conceive, then we may be very sure that whatever impressions we receive at the time will be such as are not calculated to lead us astray, but if we are ourselves in the shadow, in an inharmonious condition towards the higher, we shall be very likely to draw corresponding impressions, and be liable to be led astray. In order to understand when our impressions are of the right character, and when they ail not, and when they are likely to lead us up or to lead us down, we must understand always when we are in harmony with the great good that is beyond us. We must learn to measure ourselves by this great outside good, this eternal God, never forgetting that the balances are within. The only balance wherein we can weigh our own individual condition of being, is within ourselves, and we call it reason, the highest of all the attributes that the Great Father has seen fit to endow the human with. By D. Star King, May 7, 1868. Question. Do the dwellers in the spirit spheres construct habitations, gardens, and sea, according to their individual tastes? And by what process, and of what materials? Answer. There are, indeed, gardens in the spirit world so much more beautiful than what you have here, that you can form no just estimate of them. Indeed, everything that finds expression here is more fully represented with us. All the beauty of life, all the power of life, everything that is expressed in art, in science, in nature, all find a counterpart in the spirit world. It would be absolutely impossible for us to give you so close an analysis concerning the material of which all their beauty and power are constructed, because you are bound about by the law of your human senses. Your eyes cannot see, your ears cannot hear, neither can it enter into your hearts to conceive all the glories that pertain particularly to the spirit world. You may catch faint glimpses of its reality, but the clear noontide glory of the reality you cannot behold, you cannot understand, until you too shall become disrobed of the flesh, and shall stand gazing upon it through spiritual senses. Question. Some creeds would teach us that kindred ties which exist in this life are no more when we enter the spirit world. Is this true in any manner? Answer. all ties that belong to the soul carries with it when it is resurrected from the body of flesh. The loves which we had are ours still, and all the conditions of our mental being we carry with us to the spirit world, because we shall have need of them there. Our friends do not forsake us there, neither do we forsake them. All true attraction is most clearly represented in the spirit world,